1 month.
Oh, and is this your first?
Yes, my first.
Oh, congratulations, man.
Thank you. That's awesome. I appreciate it.
Oh, Gabe made it.
Oh, wow. We got the whole squad here for Nico.
Yeah. Could not miss this one. I was only sitting in the lobby for, you know, the past 9 or 12 or 20 minutes. Man, it's all good. It's all good. I'm just glad to be here. How you doing, Nico?
Happy to be here, man. Thanks for the invite. And I, you know, it's cool. I love what you guys are doing. I keep telling this to Alex. It's really special. And it's very unique. And I think you guys are contributing something awesome to the Bitcoin community and the ecosystem. And veterans are some of the most badass people I know, self-sufficient and, you know, cool mother effers. So, yeah, I love what you guys are doing.
Oh, you can definitely say motherfuckers on this show. It's okay. Like,
okay, just, I didn't just know, let it fly. Yeah, cool motherfuckers. I've been trying to introduce Alex to like a buddy of mine, which I grew up with, and he's absolutely insane, but like in a good way. And you know, and he makes his company makes the covers for. I literally came from Simply Sessions directly to here, Matthew. So, but yeah, he makes the suppression covers. To the suppressor so you don't get your hands burnt when you touch them. And it's really, really badass. And he reminds me of Alex.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's a compliment.
Yeah, must be a nice guy.
But Nico, man, you have an honorary position here in Bitcoin Veterans, as far as I'm concerned. You're like an honorary Bitcoin veteran because you're my bro. You and I go back a ways. Like, you're new.
We've been through battle together, bro. It's a different type of battle. But
different type of battle. Yes, for sure. For sure. I have a great deal of appreciation for you, my man. Also, you know, just the background. This is something I want to get into in the show once we actually go live. But I want to talk a little bit about, like, just the direction that everything's headed in the United States. You know exactly what I'm saying, man. And, like, because of your background and how you grew up and like the kind of arc of your history with your family, like I think you can share probably a pretty good perspective on this stuff.
Yeah, man, it's interesting what's happening. I usually try to take like, just cause I try to be a little bit more inclusive in my messaging in terms of my personal content. But like what's happening in the US right now is the country's going down the collectivist path and a lot of people are just not aware of it.
Yeah.
But you see it. And I think a lot of people think that because it hasn't happened here, like it can't happen.
Yeah.
But tell that to like any Venezuelan, Cuban, you know, Eastern European person. And they'll be like, I've seen that before. It's just been rebranded, but it's the same stuff, right? And most importantly, it leads to the same outcome. So I think we're like in this very tumultuous, we're in a very tumultuous time in US history. And, you know, this year is going to be crazy with the election. But regardless of what happens in the election, I think Bitcoin provides this, provides this like source of hope in these crazy, crazy times. Like regardless of what happens, and this, as long as you have Bitcoin and you have the Bitcoin in self custody, like you're good, you know, like you're fine. Like it things could get really, really bad, you know. So, yeah, man, it's crazy times, but I feel optimistic. I think things are gonna turn out for the better. And also one of the things that I love about the US that I don't hear a lot of people talk about is just how the system of government is structured, where the individual states have tremendous amount of sovereignty. And for some reason, the founding fathers were like, they absolutely knew that it's like freedom of speech, number one, and make sure that everyone is armed, number two, to protect number one.
Yeah.
And that tends to make it very difficult for any type of centralized government to impose their will on the masses, right? So yep. I think that like there's a final backstop there. Hopefully it doesn't get to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pray that it doesn't.
It's almost like they had studied history and knew that such a thing was possible of happening again. Maybe they knew how kind of how humans worked. And I agree with you. Let's hope that the simple existence of that Second Amendment will help us to not have to actually exercise the implementations that are a part of it. So, well, and nobody wants it.
It's like the crazy part too. Like I honestly, I think the craziest part is that when you dig in, when you start pulling on these threads, like you pick one and you pull it hard enough and long enough and it comes back to the money. Then you pull on another string and it takes you down to like to another industry or another form of government or like it's just like you'll get the EPA, you'll get American education, you'll get agriculture and ranching. You look at like livestock. You look at the automotive industry, like energy, health, public health. Like it all goes back to poor incentives with the money.
Yeah,
that's the crazy part.
And how hardcore can I go on this podcast?
Oh, as hard. Let's go.
Let me frame it like this. This is episode 38. Every single episode we've had, we have tried our damnedest to get kicked off of YouTube. Hasn't happened yet.
Yep.
But one of these days. But until then, we are going to be laying down the truth. We just
needed to bring Nico on.
Yeah. Okay, so yes, the money is the root of all this, but it's essentially the central control of money. So it's the centralization of money via the Federal Reserve. And that's essentially fed the Leviathan that some people call the deep state. I call it the administrative state. Currently, the U.S. government is the largest employer in the world. You have like 11 million people that are actively employed by the federal government. If you include the contractors, I think it goes up to like 16 million.
Oh,
it's absolutely massive in size. And what you're seeing right now, a lot of these like burdens and a lot of these things, you mostly feel this when you go through an airport. And I know that you guys know what I'm talking about. It is all funded by the money printer. And then most importantly, also there's like other secondary effects that they can't afford the money that they're spending in the first place. The U.S. government spends $1 to $2 trillion every year more than it collects in tax revenue. And then the effects of that are mostly felt by the lower and middle classes that don't have the means to save in assets. Therefore, they don't benefit from asset inflation. So you hear the line, the poor get poorer and the rich get richer. A lot of people claim capitalism for that. But in reality, it's the money that's breaking everything. People continue to seek a political solution, which is why the political divide gets greater and greater. But the solution is right up in their face. All they have to do is just buy Bitcoin. And the American dream is alive if you've been living on a Bitcoin standard. That house that you wanted, it's actually getting cheaper over time.
Yep. Facts.
Well, so, and I think an aspect of that is also just because of the fact that Bitcoin is something that the human species has never experienced before. Like we're at a situation where history does rhyme. We've been here before and we've almost always taken the same exact strategy because we never had something like Bitcoin, right? Like that's something that normie people don't understand.
You know what's cool? We didn't even started the show yet.
I know.
I can already tell this is going to be a fire freaking episode.
Fire intro for sure.
You guys ready?
Let's do it.
Fire first fact. Let's go. Let's go. Everybody, welcome to Bitcoin Veterans. This is real simple. We're Bitcoiners. We're veterans. You need to come down a little bit. Is that what you're saying there?
Really fucking loud.
I'm so excited. We got Nico Moran here today. I mean, what? Short notice as well. I mean, If you guys don't know Nico, I don't know what rock you're under. He is the host and creator of Simply Bitcoin TV. He is an advisor to the Bitcoin Well and SaaS Mining, which we have just talked to here on the show. Nico, I've been following you for a while now, man. We are excited to have you on Bitcoin Veterans. Your comments in Bitcoin Veterans are always greatly appreciated. I think Chuck Norris is jealous of some of these comments, and but I appreciate you being here, man. I was just listening to you the other day, and you said something like, "If you ain't Bitcoin, and you ain't freedom," or something. I wasn't quite that. Don't quote me, but I saw it, and I was like, "Man, that is yeah. If you're against Bitcoin, you're absolutely against freedom." So you are in good company here, my friend. Welcome to the show.
Well, happy to be here. Thanks for having me. And yeah, that line, if you're against Bitcoin, you're against freedom. I used it at Bitcoin 2021 main stage. Never talked at a Bitcoin conference before. Got invited super last minute. But I spent like the entire morning trying to come up with something that I knew would rile people up. And there's this book called Rules for Radicals, and highly recommend you reading it. But essentially, it's kind of like how to rile up like a political movement, so to speak. And one of the things that book says is that when you have an action, make sure that the opponent, whichever way they decide to react to your action, they lose in every situation. So in that saying, either Bitcoin or slavery, or if you're against Bitcoin, you're against freedom. There's no way to attack that without making yourself sound like a total asshole. I'm surprised it went viral the way it did.
It's brilliant, man. Brilliant. If you're against Bitcoin, you're against veterans.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah, you're against America.
Speaking of veterans, bro. This is information narrative trench warfare. We're fighting in the battlegrounds of the internet, man. Hand-to-hand combat. Tweets are the bullets. Memes are the artillery. And we're fucking winning, bro.
That's another good one. I love that one.
Hell yeah.
Let's go. Man, we're already up to almost 200 live viewers on Twitter and approaching a good number on YouTube itself. If you're on YouTube, you're listening, hit that. Like, hit that subscribe, all the above. Thank you for being here. Really appreciate you guys. Nico, my brother, I appreciate you being here. I would love to dig into some of the stuff that I think you can speak to maybe better than a lot of people. Like your background, I'm going to let you tell your own story, but my understanding is you came from a country where you have personal experience, when your family has personal experience, watching this country morph from a prosperous society, basically get taken over by what I would consider sort of Marxist ideologies, transferred all the wealth and all the power to a very small number of people, impoverished basically everybody, took away everybody's freedoms. I'll let you take it from there, man. Tell us a little bit about your background and why this stuff hits home for you.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Venezuela, and Venezuela used to be the wealthiest country in Latin America. Very small country. It's 30 million people, and within a matter of 20 years, it basically today it's like a failed state. Authoritarian government. It's, it has one of the largest oil reserves in the world. I think it has the largest oil reserves in the world. And it's so mismanaged that they can't even extract oil at this point. The leader that was democratically elected is Chavez, and he was famous for doing these speeches on TV for hours and hours. And he would just go like walk around town and point at buildings and stores and say, you know what? We're repatriating this. We're just going to take it back. The state's just going to seize your property. What does that sound like to you with a certain political figure right now? What's happening in terms of the seizure of property? Since Alex already dropped the Marxist word, essentially what's happened in the US, really this started in the 1960s. They realized that the class warfare of getting the lower classes to rise up to the upper classes did not work. Why? Because people believe that there was upward mobility in the United States. If you worked hard enough, you can work yourself up from the lower class to the middle class to the upper class. They did a little bait and switch. And the bait and switch, instead of the lower classes and the upper classes, they made it about race. And that was a lot more successful. But the philosophy itself is the same. It's cultural Marxism. That's it. That's what's happening right here in the U.S. With the protests that happened a couple years ago. You'll notice something. If there's any type of protest from the right, it's oppressed. If there's any type of protest from the left, it's kind of, they look the other way. That's called repressive tolerance. That comes from the Frankfurt School, Herbert Marcuse. And this is stuff that has been studied and perfected over the decades. And what they did is that they took the long route. I'm sure you guys have heard this phrase, but they took the long route through the institutions. So what you have here in the U.S. is you have, it's very interesting. The very top of the spectrum is the what I would call the elites, the bureaucratic elites, the financial elites. And they're using the Marxist philosophy, not necessarily because they believe in it, but they're using it in order to retain power. But if you think about what the source of funding is of all of this, what it boils down to is the Federal Reserve and their ability to create money out of nothing, and then the misallocation of capital that comes with it. So all of what I just described has been happening really since the election of Donald Trump. That really just woke everything up, and it's just been total chaos what is happening in the U.S. right now. So, you know, all that being said, I would say that, you know, the country, the path in front of us is either a country, a path of, you know, falling down more the collectivist path, the communist path, if we're being open, that California and New York State are going down, or are we going to go back to the traditional roots of the United States, where it is a meritocracy, individualism is rewarded, individual achievement is rewarded, rather than what is now being said, which is like people are judged not so much based on their personal character, their individual achievements, but they're judged based on their group, their racial group, or, you know, where they, and it's absolutely absurd, but this is Marxism. And we already know what the outcome of Marxism is. We had a whole century of that. 120 million people died. This has been tried and tested, and it's coming to the U.S. because it's been rebranded, and because the U.S. and Western Europe have never experienced this before, they're not seeing the signs. But if you come from Cuba, if you come from Venezuela, if you come from Central America, which is why I believe Nayib Bukele has become so popular, they went through a civil war, in Eastern Europe, you know exactly what is happening right now, and you see right through the rebranding. You know what this is. This is Marxism. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, that's basically what's happening in the U.S. right now. I'm happy I have Bitcoin, because whatever happens, I know I'm good and I know my family is good.
Well, and I would add the importance of not only Bitcoin, but the fact of being in you're important. Being in America, the fact that we are different governmentally from like anything else, like we are still very much an experiment. Mix that with Bitcoin, I think, Nico, like it provides us, it provides a good source of optimism. I agree with you, because like the other thing too is that what you're talking about is just put like right now, I think a lot of us would agree that particularly America and Western Europe are in a window of opportunity for them to like bring their plans or their intentions to climax, to getting the full communism seated, right? Before everybody realizes what the game is being played, and that they have an opportunity to like kind of dole the fall and like resist the full kind of like conversion. Like they have a small window and it's closing. The longer we go, it means a greater chance of us like fixing our shit. Right.
Yeah, I mean, so have you guys seen the video on YouTube? It's extremely famous of this Soviet KGB agent that defected to the U.S. Yeah. I forget what his name is. And he was talking about the process of demoralization.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and what's really interesting, by the way, is that that interview, by the way, if you guys didn't know this, was conducted by the author of The Creature of Jekyll Island. How effing crazy is that? I swear to God.
Really?
Right. But I forget what G. Edward Griffin. He conducted that interview, which is nuts. So anyways, I think that a huge portion of the country has just completely been, for lack of a better word, kind of propagandized, indoctrinated in a way. They're not really aware of what it is they're actually like. Kind of, you know, yeah, let's do it. Like they're not aware of what they're actually wanting, right? And that part scares me a little bit because I've seen that before, and you can't really stop that. Like they're so demoralized, they're so, you know, bought into what it is they're asking for, that even if you showed them the truth and you're like, look, here's what's actually happening, they don't even know it. They can't even tell, right? They can't even acknowledge it, right?
Like a theology kind of thing.
I would say communism, Marxism, whatever. I would say it is a form of religion for sure. It's a non-theistic religion, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's especially appealing, from what I understand, to people who feel they adopt a victim mindset. So people who feel that they're a victim and that's part of their identity, like this kind of ideology is extremely attractive to them because it creates this scenario where, I mean, it's fake, right? But the fantasy is that the downtrodden and the victims are actually the heroes of the story. They're the righteous ones. And it's the people who are successful. It's people who are capitalists, business owners, people who are doing well, they are the enemy. And by default, you know, the whole ideology is basically like, if you're doing well, you have to be a bad person, because there's no way that you can be doing well unless you're a bad person of some type. And so they adopt this where they're like, we are morally superior to these other people who must be evil because they're doing well. And it basically, it's very dangerous for a meritocratic society, and it leans into this idea that if you just like take all the wealth from everyone and then somehow make it fair, that everything will be okay. But what people don't realize is that only the absolute oligarchs get all the wealth. Everybody else gets orders of magnitude poorer and worse off.
100%. And that's the part where, like, if you made the argument for communism back in the 1920s, you could have made an argument that, hey, this is going to work. It's never been tried before. By the 60s to 70s, it was very aware, right? It became very apparent that this is not going to work. It's a failed economic model, right?
Yeah.
And then that's when they did the bait and switch. That's when they made it about
worse than a failed economic model. It's a failed human model.
Yes.
Because inevitably what this type of thing leads to is mass violence on a massive scale. It leads to sometimes famine, starvation. It leads to like as you mentioned, hundreds of millions of deaths. And that is in every single case, if you look at history, every time, that's what this ends up in.
100%. You see this in China, Cuba, Vietnam, Cambodia. Like literally, like you can go down the list. Every place around there, it's always the same thing. It's like, that wasn't real socialism. It's like, how many times do you have to try, bro? But one thing that I will say is, so this is happening, and we're aware of this is happening. Now, one of the philosophies that I've tried to apply to my content, and one of the traps that I see, for example, the American right fall into, the conservative media, is they sure like to complain and they sure like to react, right? So it's like, oh, this is crazy. The world's burning, blah, 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 blah. But what I've realized is attack the root issue without being confrontational about it. So my job as a Bitcoiner is for me to get you to take the orange pill. Once you take the orange pill, you don't change Bitcoin. Bitcoin changes you. I've seen Bitcoiners who call themselves socialists and communists or whatever, redefine words for it to fit their philosophy. But in their minds, they're like, not your keys, not your Bitcoin. They're rooting for self-custody. They're rooting for all the tenets of Bitcoin. I don't care if they're going to redefine the words. I know that person's on my team. And if you really want to attack that philosophy, the philosophy is built on wealth redistribution. It's built, if the fifth tenet of the Communist Manifesto is the necessity for central banking. If you don't have a effective wealth redistribution mechanism, that whole ideology breaks on its own. Yeah. So what do I mean by that? There's two wealth redistribution mechanisms. There's direct taxation, which you can only increase so much without a revolt. And the more insidious one, the one that they get away with till this day, is the wealth redistribution mechanism of inflation, currency debasement. That's how they pay for things. Yep. So if we really want to attack it, hate is a strong word. I strongly dislike what the conservative and the right-wing media does, because their solution to the problem is to go out and vote. I'm not saying that voting is bad or it's not important, but the solution I'm providing is, instead of going to the polls and voting, or you go to the poll and vote, but the vote that will actually make a difference, the things that it will actually change things on a fundamental level, is if you vote with your wallet, buy Bitcoin, earn Bitcoin, mine Bitcoin, and take that Bitcoin into self-custody, you will actually effectuate change a lot quicker than the traditional route. We've seen the traditional route all over the world. And how many of those, quote unquote democracies, right? Look, as in the case of Venezuela, Chavez was democratically elected, right? So if we actually want to change the system for the better and for it to actually stay that way, we got to actually change the underlying cause of this. What is the root cause? The centralization of money. It's central banking itself. You attack that, the whole thing falls apart.
Damn. That was good.
Hell yeah.
Psychological information warfare, baby. Yeah.
Hell yeah. You're sending it down range. So question, you mentioned earlier, we talked about the deep state, and then you referred to it as the administrative state. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? I hadn't heard it referred to in that manner before, and I'm just curious where you're coming from on that.
Yeah. So the deep state is, everyone's like, oh, the deep state, right? No, it's right up in your grill, dude. Like it's that's why I call it the administrative state. So what is the administrative state? The administrative state is the unelected bureaucracy, the managerial class that remains in power regardless of who gets elected into office. There's been many interviews with Putin, which I'm not a huge fan of, obviously, but there's been many interviews with Putin where he talks about it, right? He talks about it when Obama was in office and Bush was in office. And basically he's like, I loved Obama. He was this progressive president. He had all these ideas. And then what tends to happen is you get into office and then the men in suits come in and they say, actually, this is how things are done, right? I think it really started to get exposed during the Trump administration. That's really where that whole system started to come out. Chuck Schumer, the leading Senate majority leading Senate majority leader for the Democrats, he did an interview on CNBC, on NBC, and he was basically saying look, you don't mess around with the intelligence community. Because there's 12 ways back the intelligence community will get back at you. And then you're going to have to start asking questions like, wait a second. So if we elect a guy into office because we, the people, believe that there's something wrong and we want change, but in reality, there is this unelected bureaucracy and they're the ones that are getting to dictate the rules of what can be done and what can't be done, there's a problem there. But once again, like as a Bitcoiner, you can bring all these things to light and you can be part of the political discussion. Like I've seen this happen so many times, right? But then you get othered, right? You get kind of put into a category where they shadow ban you. They don't want you to talk about certain things. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, instead of going down that route, what's been tried and tested, all I have to do is just convince enough people in the US to take the orange pill. And then all of a sudden, they're going to want these things without me directly confronting them on their political beliefs and their political philosophies.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because you can't beat people over the head with that. I mean, everybody believes that they're right, of course. And I mean, we shape our entire realities around our perceptions of the world and our political philosophies and all of our other beliefs that we assign to ourselves or have assigned to us. And there's that it's always counterproductive, especially when we're trying to get people to see something that is above and that is more and that is beyond all of the, you know, political squabbles and differences and so forth, with something that is as powerful as actual true money that leads to freedom, which is Bitcoin. And we can't attack people with it. All that we can do is introduce them to it and then let them apply it to their own situation and system of beliefs and then come to their own natural, truthful conclusions from that. So yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for going into that. I got one more question. I'm sorry to hog up all the time, guys, but we're talking about this trajectory that everything is on and the, you know, I'll call it the communization of America or whatever we want to say it is. And we're in a different time now. We know it's been tried in other places and it's failed miserably. And yet we're doing it again. We're kind of calling it different things. But what role do you see what's the role of technology that you see in this entire process? You know, for the good and also, you know, for the otherwise.
Yeah. So that's a great question. So what role does technology have? So the internet started the fire and then Bitcoin came with a gallon of gasoline and just poured it on that fire that was already lit. The internet disintermediated information. So what we're doing right now is we're communicating directly peer to peer and you guys are broadcasting directly to your audience. Before the internet, there was a handful of gatekeepers of information. They call themselves journalists and they call themselves media organizations. And that essentially was where people got their news. What's come to light over the last 5 years, I would say, and people started to become aware of this, is we started to realize that those quote unquote credible news agencies were nothing more than propagandists, right? If you have the Wall Street Journal coming out with an article that Elizabeth Warren coincidentally is using as ammunition to put pressure on the FinCEN to pass anti-Bitcoin legislation, and then it came out in congressional testimony that Wall Street Journal article was complete bogus, they would have gotten away with that a decade ago. The reason they didn't get away with that now is because of social media. Look at how much they're trying to go after Elon. People forgot this, but about a year ago, they tried to release basically the Ministry of Truth here in the US, yep, right? In the Department of Homeland Security.
Yep.
15 years, you guys are veterans, so this will play close to you guys. 15 years ago, they convinced the American public using the New York Times that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. It yep. came out after the fact that information actually came from the intelligence industry. So essentially what technology is doing right now is that it's disintermediated the gatekeepers of information. That's what social media has allowed. And you're seeing the rise of independent media. Governments are losing their minds because of that. They can't control the narrative like they used to. Yep. At the same time, there's a bit of an overlap, is the disintermediation of money. And that's what's happening right now. And that's what Bitcoin is. So first, the disintermediation of information, right, which is what's allowing us to communicate right now and us communicating directly to your audience. And on top of that, the disintermediation of money. And if you're a nation state that has been used to controlling the masses by controlling a handful of media institutions, and you also controlled the money, you're looking at this and you're like, holy crap, the gig is up. which is why they're reacting so aggressively to what is happening right now. And by the way, all of this was predicted back in the 90s in the book The Sovereign Individual. They predicted all of this was going to happen, and it's happening how they predicted it.
It's amazing.
I think it's important too, like to your point, Nico, like the combination of those two, effects or waves on a country or a populace or a globe, like they feed into each other. So that change comes very, very quickly, which is, I don't think we've seen the height of the fear from these nation states yet, or the intelligence community for that matter.
I think like a wounded animal, like pressed into a corner, I think that's when they become the most, you know, dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't think we're there yet, but what gives me hope is that the discussion is already starting to seep into the mainstream political rhetoric. What do I mean by that? You had Governor Ron DeSantis passing a law in Florida outlawing central bank digital currencies. Part of his campaign was basically, if you elect me to president, I'll support Bitcoin. You had RFK Jr. on the Democratic side who went independent. You had Vivek Ramaswamy, who actually told Trump to say, look, if you elect me, the CBDC talking point is very popular with your base. Trump said it to the crowd and he was actually surprised. He's like, whoa, you guys actually really like about this, right? So the discourse is already in the mainstream political rhetoric. So their ability, specifically in the US, I think the EU is effed, but specifically in the US, it's going to be very difficult for them to roll out a central bank digital currency without having a majority in Congress. And I think that time is against them, because as more and more of the populace adopts Bitcoin, it kind of becomes like the passing gun laws, right?
Yeah.
There's always big talk about the gun laws, like, oh, we're going to pass a gun law, and nothing ever happens. And that's because a lot of the American population holds guns, right? So I hope Bitcoin gets there fast enough.
Yeah.
Because the other side, I think, sees the writing on the wall. Like, I think Elizabeth Warren knows the gig is up, but she can't say it. She can't say it openly, because how could you convince people, like, hey, I actually want to force you to use the money that steals from you? Like, that's not a good pitch, you know? So she has to rely on misinformation, misrepresentation, and spin.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we got a minute. Let's do a couple of quick announcements here, and then we will keep rolling. Like, Nico, you are absolutely on freaking fire. We've got all kinds of crazy positive comments about what you're hitting. Is just nonstop signal. Real quick, a few housekeeping items. Things that we've got coming up next month is going to be BitBlock Boom. We have an amazing discount with Bitcoin Veterans. If you're interested, get in contact with us. You can reach out to us at Bitcoin Veterans on Twitter. And just let us know if you're a veteran or you're a veteran adjacent, hook up with us. We've got a great discount for you there. Also, Nashville, the Bitcoin 2024 conference, same thing. Massive discount. Same thing with Pacific Bitcoin Festival that's coming up in October. Massive discounts. All of these festivals and conferences have been reaching out to Bitcoin veterans and supporting us in a big way. We're going to be we're going to have a big breakout room at Nashville 2024. We're going to have a stage. We're going to be doing breakout sessions. We're going to be doing a number of different things there. We're going to be talking about open source VPN, self-hosted, effective, generally easy privacy tool, how to deploy it, host it, threat modeling it. That's going to be from a former army guy who's a specialist in this stuff. What is this guy? Cybersecurity guy. In addition to that, in our area that we're going to have we're calling it the Bitcoin Veterans Citadel. We're going to have a stage in there. We're going to have Start OS doing breakout sessions, number of different things. We're going to be testing for and qualifying people for ham radio, Mestastic demonstrations, on-chain surveillance. We have a former veteran who is also former law enforcement, and his specialty was literally tracking down and hunting down criminals using blockchain surveillance technology. So he's going to come teach about that kind of stuff. And it's going to be absolutely fantastic. On July 26th, Jordan wants me to shout this out. We've got the Bitcoin Veterans Meetup that's going to be happening. Again, connect with us to ask more information about that. Coming up, speakers, April 4th, we've got Breedlove coming on next week. I think it is. Brian DeMint's going to be coming up the week after that. Then we've got Dom Bay and Guy Swan following that. That's it.
We're going to be busy, guys. I mean, this
yeah. No big deal. That's it.
Whatever. You thought we were busy before. I think it's just warming up here. Nico, you've got something that you put out there most mornings or quite a few mornings. It's Bitcoin or slavery. And when I think of this, you know, it's obviously very plain for me. It may not be plain for some of the people out there that are new to Bitcoin. Man, can you just elaborate a little bit? Like we've got some very slim choices here, and the faster that people can understand this one, the better off we're all going to be.
Yeah. So it's kind of like what I was saying. I don't know if we were saying this off air, but we have to remember we're, again, information warfare. So it's really about winning over the hearts and minds of individuals, getting more people on the side of Team Orange versus the side of Team Green. Team Orange is the side of Bitcoin. Team Green is the side of central bank digital currencies. Make no mistake, 90% of the countries all over the world are currently developing central bank digital currencies, or they're already in pilot programs. So when I say Bitcoin or slavery, it's either Bitcoin, right? That's the future that we have in front of us, or we have a future of central bank digital currencies. We think central banking is bad. Imagine having a direct account with the state and then thinking that the state isn't going to use that against you. And even in the US with all the constitutional protections, they froze a lot of January 6th protesters' accounts, right? The Canadian truckers protest, same thing. They froze accounts. Now imagine a CBDC where they don't even have to go to a bank to say, hey, we're going to freeze this person's account. We're just going to go bank, freeze it, right? I think in the US, I think they're looking over at China and they're saying, hey, that was a great, you know, that was the whole kind of theory, right? Is that, oh, we're going to open China to economic freedom. And that was going to make China, you know, a more capitalist country. The exact opposite happened, where Western elites fell in love with the China model. And right now they're in the process of trying to bring a China light model to the Western world. And CBDCs play a major role in that, in terms of being able to control the populace. But the bad thing for them is that, I'm not going to say unfortunately, but the part for them that sucks is that CBDCs will never do two things that Bitcoin will do. So incentives, Bitcoin's going to rule the day. Number one is that governments are always going to want to control the money flows. They're always going to want to censor. They're always going to want to get to dictate what transaction is okay, what transaction is not okay. Number two, and this is the part that they ignore like the plague, which means that us as information warriors, we have to highlight it because they don't have a good response to it, is they always talk about CBDCs about making more efficient payments. They never mention inflation. And then none of the documents is inflation mentioned. The reason they can't mention inflation is because if they mention inflation, they highlight the fact that Bitcoin, which is the alternative, is a deflationary currency, which means that money can exist without losing purchasing power. They do not want the public to find that out, right? That's a metaphorical death sentence for what they're trying to achieve. So to go back to your original question, Bitcoin or slavery, it's Bitcoin or central bank digital currencies, and central bank digital currencies are going to give an ungodly amount of power to the government.
Yeah. The thing about inflation, deflation, I agree with that 100%. They can't talk about inflation because that is the thing that is literally destroying really America and in second and third order effects, really the rest of the world, because the US dollar is the world's reserve currency, right? So we've got this massive increasing waves of inflation that are being essentially pumped out to the entire planet. But you mentioned that Bitcoin is deflationary. I'm going to push back on that in just a little bit, in that I don't think Bitcoin is there. That word deflationary triggers a lot of fiat-minded economist type people, because their whole thing is, well, if you have a deflationary system, you're going to have a debt crisis and the whole system is going to implode. So it really freaks them out, right? To be technically precise. Bitcoin is not deflationary. Bitcoin has a fixed supply and it will never exceed a fixed number. And the amount that is being added to the existing supply gets lowered in terms of the rate of issuance every 4 years, which we call the halving, right? So that's not necessarily deflationary, because deflationary would imply that the monetary supply is actually shrinking. That's not true. We're adding slightly to the monetary supply of Bitcoin, but one of the most powerful things in my mind about Bitcoin, and one of the things that's really hard for people to wrap their mind around, is it has an absolute inflationary endpoint of zero, meaning once the 21 million Bitcoin are issued, there's never going to be any more. And because the human race has never seen anything like that before, it's very hard for people to wrap their minds around and kind of understand that aspect of it. It's very powerful though.
100%. But you see, okay, so it took you about a minute to explain that, right?
Yes.
This is what I mean about the information warfare aspect of it. All I have to say is deflation, and all of a sudden I can get someone on my side, right? That's Bitcoin or slavery. If you're against Bitcoin, you're against freedom, whatever. All the things are structured in a way to basically attack the other side in as short a slogan as possible so that it stays in people's minds. Technically, you're 100% right. How do I squeeze that into three words?
Got it. So what you're talking about is, let's get better, at Bitcoin Jedi mastery wordsmithing. And Alex is like a Padawan going, show me how to use a lightsaber. And Nico's like, that's how.
It's war. It's like they're playing. And this is the part that like people don't understand. Like, but this is information warfare. Like when you have the White House press secretary going out and they're literally telling you that Thanksgiving has gotten cheaper than the year before, inflation is down. Look how conniving that word is. Okay. Inflation is down. If you don't know, you're like, oh, inflation is things are going to get cheaper. That's not what they mean. That means that the rate at which prices are increasing is slower, but it doesn't mean that the prices are going lower. So my job as a propagandist is to break that effing like bubble that they're in, and they're going to be like, deflation? What do you mean? Like, so like, wait a second. So your money actually raises over time. And then of course, if you want to get into the technicalities of it, of like absolute scarcity and whatever, of course you explain the intricacies of it. But what I'm concerned is, how do we get as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, to our side of the football before the game starts, right? That's what I'm thinking, and that's how I view it.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff, man. And it's, you'll see, I mean, there's a recent example, and I'm not taking either side of any political spectrum at all, because it's all jacked up on all the way around. But there was a recent example with the use of a certain figure's the word bloodbath. And then, I mean, that was like a freaking script that was repeated, bloodbath, bloodbath. I mean, on everybody, and that was just like, you better believe. I mean, there are elements out there that have scripts that they are using. And they're really good at doing this stuff. I mean, we've talked about it before. They've got these billion-dollar Hollywood industries that are writing the scripts for them that they are using to encapsulate this world that they want us to perceive in a certain way. And they're programming it. They're programming people with it. And it's important because, I mean, Bitcoin is kind of complicated for somebody who's new to it. It can be a little bit confusing, and that's definitely what, you know, they want you to think. Is that, you know, this is too much for you to understand. It's just weird. You know, with CBDC, all you have to do is, you know, like go look at the machine and it's going to, you know, take away however many credits we gave you for your milk or whatever the case may be. And it is warfare. And I'm glad that you used that word, because, you know, we were talking about the First Amendment. We were talking about the Second Amendment a little bit earlier. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Jason Lowry's work. He has a thesis called Soft War. And he recommends that that Bitcoin should be protected by the Second Amendment due to its ability to project power and essentially to behave almost like it's a weapon. What are your thoughts on his approach to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that the end of the day, what it comes down to is there, you know, the government has a monopoly on violence, right? So even in the US, with all the constitutional protections, the reality is that, like, it doesn't matter, right? The men with guns, you know, have the final say. So I think that as Bitcoiners, what I really, really like, for us to win, we basically need to capture nation states in a peaceful way. So El Salvador is a beachhead, right? There, the men with guns will protect us, right? In the US, I hope, you know, certain states, right? The men with guns will protect us, right? So with Jason Lowry's thesis, right, about it, Bitcoin being, you know, what it is, you know, to put it bluntly, it's just a thesis, right? Like, it's just an idea. If you don't have the monopoly on violence protecting your beliefs or protecting whatever it is that you're doing, does it really matter? And you mentioned something which I call the media industrial complex. So the media industrial complex is fascinating once you look at it. I'll give you an example. When Putin and Tucker had an interview, the next day they got Jon Stewart, who has retired from The Daily Show for many years, to literally make fun of Tucker doing that interview. Then they got all the legacy media outlets basically attacking that interview that Tucker did with Putin. That Jon Stewart episode, you can watch it right now on YouTube, has millions of views. It completely discredited it to the point where if you're watching that, you're like, why should I even watch this interview? This guy's a moron. Like, Tucker's a moron for doing this interview. Regardless of however which way you see Putin, he's a trained KGB agent. He ran circles around Tucker in that interview. But it's still a good idea to get all perspectives to make an informed decision. So essentially, the media industrial complex is literally designed in a way to get people to think a certain way. There's a very famous YouTube video of like all these media outlets, right? It starts with one, then it goes to two, then it goes to three, then it goes to four, then it goes to like 100. And it says, there's misinformation around and it's a danger to democracy. And they're all repeating the exact same thing. That's what I'm talking about. And they're very, very good. Look, the in the Soviet Union, the state official paper was called Pravda. If you translate that to English, it means truth. Okay. Pravda is 1/100th of what the media industrial complex here is in the United States today in terms of their ability to control the masses through propaganda. Because at least in Soviet Russia, people were like, that's a lie. The Solzhenitsyn quote comes to mind, right? You know they're lying, we know they're lying, and they're lying anyway. Here, it's like they're lying, and a huge portion of the population is believing the lie because of the quality and the production value of the content being made. All of that being said, if we're not playing on their level in terms of war information warfare, we're going to lose, right? And we're in a race against time. We have to get people on our side taking the orange pill. We don't have to attack their political beliefs or their political philosophies. If we get them to buy Bitcoin, earn Bitcoin, mine Bitcoin, and take that Bitcoin into self-custody, Bitcoin will change them from the inside without us having to directly confront them.
Man. Nico has just been giving a masterclass of psychological warfare. And this is why that I feel very confident that like we're on the winning side, because Nico, I don't think was professionally trained to do this. And he's just analyzed it and he can figure it out. Whereas it takes their propaganda people like, we have to pump you through schools. We have to force this down you. We have to go through a lot of work to try to put out our version of the truth. And Nico's just laying out how we can all just destroy.
Let me tell you something about Nico really quick. He may not be professionally trained, but this man puts in the proof of work. He is a self-studying monster. The stuff that this guy takes the time to learn and study about and understand is in my mind, it's easily PhD level shit. And so, like, whether he's professionally trained or not, I consider Nico to be one of the fucking Jedis on our side. So glad he's on our side, not the other side.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Nico, I mean, you've gone into some amazing depth in terms of your understanding of where we're at, especially as how we're battling the state here, not to mention the central banks and the elites that are out there in the different industries. What is your passion come from? Like, who are the people that have kind of molded you in terms of, like, the people you look up to, you know, whether it's current, past, present, whatever, and really kind of this idea of where did it come from? Was it something that your family kind of passed down to you, or was it something you just kind of found and gravitated towards and kind of, you know, started your own path?
Yeah, so first of all, Alex, you know, is very, very kind words. I consider Alex a, you know, good friend, a brother, and the better version of Chuck Norris in Bitcoin. Alex Stanza can walk on water. I've seen it. It's confirmed. I think I've told little snippets of this to Alex, but I grew up in a very privileged household. And the 2008 financial crisis basically destroyed my family. My parents, they divorced and we essentially lost everything. So I grew up with a lot and I lost it in my late teens. And that already made me extremely skeptical of the system. And let's just say that my family experienced what the current Republican president is experiencing in terms of the media industrial complex. And it destroyed my family in the early 2010s. So I've seen this and I've seen it all, and it actually initially attracted me to Bitcoin and it made me ask a lot of questions. So in a way you could say I'm jaded. And, you know, what I saw, 10 years ago, we're seeing that go into the mainstream. So like it's right up in your face anymore. If I would have told you about it 10 years ago, it was completely outside of the Overton window. It was not an acceptable, you know, discussion point. So now it is, right? Like now if, you know, I tell you little things like this and whatever, you're not going to look at me. You're like, that guy's a kook. You're like, I've just been seeing this last couple of years, right? I saw this during the pandemic. It's getting worse. Clown world is accelerating and things are breaking. So yeah, that's initially what attracted me to it, is just my life experiences, you know, from my, you know, late teenage years to, you know, my early 30s where I am now.
I was going to follow up and ask in terms of authors or leaders in this movement, like besides our humble Alex over here, where do you just see some of the brightest shining light in this space?
Yeah, I mean, so I make content every day. So the last thing that I want to do is consume content. I think I listen to ASMR videos and to like kind of unplug. And I like to walk. But in terms of who was very extremely influential to me, especially in the beginning, was Andreas Antonopoulos. I used to listen to his lectures on repeat over and over again. You know, I really recommend the banking cartel one. It's an amazing speech. The Gilded Cage, incredible. And of course, Max Keiser. Played really kind of influential roles in terms of my orange pilling. And then I'm an absolute political junkie. So, you know, I really, really enjoy kind of staying, you know, on top of what's going on in the political sphere. And you kind of connect the two. And I think what's happening is that Bitcoiners have a solution to this. Just the rest of the country hasn't awoken up to that yet. So, you know, I kind of see it like 5 years out, maybe even sooner. But we have a solution to the political, and the economic woes that a lot of people are experiencing in this country, and they're just misguided, thinking that they can just go to the ballot box and fix these problems. But in reality, it's just about taking agency and personal responsibility and opting out by buying Bitcoin and taking it into self-custody.
Nico, I think you're getting into a point that you and I both agree with. I think we've talked about it on Simply multiple times, but could you kind of elaborate, because it's kind of continuing off what, like, the awesome rants that you've been on already, is that it feels to me like the Bitcoin community is largely thinking that the then they fight you stage has already passed, and that it's going to be just some sort of like crossing the finish line event. Like, it's like, oh, November 5th on what year? And like, once you pass it, it's done. It's like, no, like, this is going to be like a years long or decades long fight. And then after that, the fight still isn't done, because it's just defending it at that point.
Yeah, it's like, is Bitcoiners don't understand that, like, we are up against like the most entrenched system that has perfected information warfare, kinetic warfare, and we're up against this behemoth that is completely reliant on the money printer. And to think that, like, they're just gonna go gently into that good night and say, oh, you guys found better money, okay, all right, peace out, everybody, I think is incredibly naive. Our tool is truth and light, which we have on our side. They have to rely on coercion and misrepresenting information in order to keep people on our side, on their side, right? We have incentives and truth. They have coercion and misrepresentation. So, you know, I think that this is going to be like straight up Stalingrad, you know, hand to hand combat, brutal, but not on a kinetic level. I think this is all going to be information warfare, fighting over for the hearts and minds of individuals. That's really what I think this is going to play out as. And then there's a lot at stake, which is, what type of world do you want your children to live in? Do you want your children to live in a world of slavery, or do you want your children to live in a world of freedom, Bitcoin, opportunity, prosperity, and all that good stuff?
Yeah. And I think it, like, to go continue even further off that, like, to your point, I don't think Bitcoiners, or really people in general, are grasping just how perfected their means of all these different forms of war have become. Like this is a mechanism and system that has operated since the establishment of like the Bank of the Vatican, right? Like, it's like you talk about Operation Gladio and the intelligence community and the ancient banking families of Italy and all the way back. Like, these guys, like, this is information that has been passed down for a long, long time.
100%. But I mean, look, the U.S. just has to get back to its roots, right? Like, you know, George Washington has, you know, the quote, right, which is, paper money has the effect in your state that it will ever have to ruin commerce, oppress the honest, and open a door to every species of fraud and injustice. So the actual fundamentals of the U.S. are amazing. I think this is the best country in the world. I really believe that. I think that if we just return to the foundations of what this country was actually built upon, and, you know, take out the root of all of this, which is central banking and the Federal Reserve, I just think things will just, you know, like, I don't, like, the differences that people have now, I don't think they'll care that much. Like, I don't think it will be that big of an issue, right? I think it's all come to the front because it's a lot easier to control people when they're divided, right? So it's like, oh, you know, look, if a Republican gets an office, they print money. If a Democrat gets an office, they print money. They both do the same thing, and it both hurt. Or you could say, okay, the Republicans print a little bit less, right? But it's the same thing, right? They both political sides do essentially the same thing. So if, you know, we want the future, we want the America that we all kind of envisioned, the America that I was sold on as an immigrant, we have to get rid of the central bank. We have to get rid of the Federal Reserve. We have to end the Fed. This thing hasn't been around very long. It was established in 1913. Like, this thing is new. Like, the idea that, you know, this without a central bank, you know, the world will go to shit. No, it's bullshit, right? But I don't think we could do it politically, because I think it's going to be incredibly difficult. But what I know that we can do is that we just got to hand out a bunch of orange pills, and then people take the orange pill, and that's it. That's all we got to do. We just got to, like, just literally go around the neighborhood and start handing out orange pills. People, like, and then they start benefiting from number go up. And then all the bullshit that they believe will just start, like, they'll just be like, oh, this is obvious. And then it unifies people. Like, I have friends who, like, they're hardcore, you know, they're Bitcoiners, and they're hardcore. Like, we have completely different political philosophies, right? You know, completely different theologies, completely whatever. And we have extreme common ground. And what is that common ground? We're Bitcoiners, right? So I think Bitcoin could, like, unify the world, like, unify the nation. But I think the way that people are approaching it on the political level is completely wrong. Like, don't attack the other side. Like, what does it matter? Like, you know, just give them an orange pill. Like, just go out and here's some Bitcoin. They put it in their wallet, number go up, and they're like, oh, I love this Bitcoin thing. And then all of a sudden you have common ground, right?
That is a good point. Sorry, Alex, I don't mean to step on you. But, like, because, like, if you think about it, like, the ways that people or nations or groups or cultures, like, weaponize their tribalism is because everything can be differentiated from each other. But if you have just one thing that you agree on, it's like, well, but we agree on money, right? And it's just like, ah, damn, dude. Like, it's hard to keep the anger when, like, you can't have complete siloization from everything else.
Yeah.
I never realized that. That's a good point.
So this is one thing that I forgot to mention in the back up for a minute. When we were doing the sort of housekeeping and announcement stuff, there is a rumor that Simply Bitcoin is going to be broadcasting live from the Bitcoin Veterans Citadel at Nashville 2024. Is there any truth to this rumor, Nico?
Oh, yes. It's 100% true. We will be bringing the Simply Bitcoin crew, and you know, we will be broadcasting live from the Bitcoin Veterans Nashville Citadel. Should be a lot of fun, man. Should be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Nice. Fantastic. Super looking forward to that, man.
That's a huge announcement, man. That's awesome.
Hell yeah. I don't think people realize how fun the group is going to be, like, all of us in one spot.
Dude, it's going to be crazy. So we're going to have, like, a lounge, right? And we're going to have, like, camo netting and shit over the lounge. It'll be like one of those, like, you know, when we're forward deployed, we take whatever fucking shitty situation we're in, we're like, turn it into, like, our own little, like, mansion, mini mansion, if possible, whatever we can do, you know, whatever amenities you got. So we're going to have one section of the room is going to be like that. We'll have one section over there that's going to be the Simply Bitcoin news desk. And then we're going to have a couple of other stations around the place where different vendors and stuff are going to be putting up their stuff. So it's going to be exciting. Look forward to it.
It's really good. Go ahead.
Does that deserve an?
Nice. So we got the plan that we were going to be in this corner of the entire expo back there. Probably the best thing for us, honestly. So
it's going to be the coolest corner.
It's going to be the most amazing corner. The fact that you guys are going to be down there, you know, and things happen, right? Like, we're maybe going to be a little stressed for some things, but, like, when you go into country or you go into these other places and you kind of start making them home, these guys just have a knack for acquiring things, not stealing, but acquiring things. And so whether it's tables or furniture or decorations or beer or whatever the good time is, I imagine that
It's largely negotiated for. Right?
It's some of the things are going to show up, and it's going to be that.
It's the free market.
It's the adult version of building a fort.
Yes. Yes, that's about right.
But the important thing is all of us understand what that means.
Yeah.
And the other point too is that when guys. For those of you that haven't been in the military, when Shane says we're in the faraway corner, that means we're far away from the bosses.
The flagpole.
That means less having to shave up and just letting your beard grow out a little bit. Maybe walking around in a uniform that isn't in regulation.
Oh, man.
It's a lot more fun.
Yeah. It's where the party's going to be.
I think that was a lot of encrypted language right there, Mike. I'm digging it.
I don't know what you're talking about. We haven't been talking about like information war this whole time.
Yeah.
I think the only way to start following this one up is I'm gonna tell you right now.
That time?
It is.
It's that time. All right.
What time is it?
Story time, people. Nico, I don't know if you were briefed by Alex or anybody else, but story time.
I didn't brief him. You're gonna have to explain this to him live.
Nothing doing like being on the spot. Sometimes our shows can get very real, and when they get very real, they can go down some doom and gloom a little bit. And when it goes down doom and gloom, we like to turn the show around by the end and tell some amazing stories. A lot of veterans have great war stories and all that kind of stuff that are more comical than they are sad and depressing, which makes for a great ending to a great show. Not to put you on the spot or anything, but we're gonna you got a great story in Bitcoin. Maybe some shit went sideways. You made the best out of it. I'm sure. I mean, between you and Opti, I know you guys have a good time. Can you tell us a story maybe you haven't told before that would be entertaining?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay, you already got one.
All right. Yeah,
I'll let you just run with it then.
Okay, so So we started doing productions for like these conferences. So we're doing the production for BitBlock Boom, and we're doing the production for the Canadian Bitcoin Conference. And, then we did the production for Unconfiscatable and all that stuff. But the way that started was we got invited to this mining conference in Texas. And like the people were like, hey, do you want to come to this? Do you want to like do like live news coverage and like all that stuff? And no. And I told him like, we'll do live news coverage. We'll like do the thing. We'll do that, blah, 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 blah. And, so we go to this, I literally bring like a carry on with like all my equipment, lights and like whatever, and like pretend like I know what I'm doing, but I have absolutely no what I'm doing. I have no idea what I'm doing. I've never done this before. Like, this is absolutely crazy. And I get there and, it's this mining conference. And like, I go up to him, I'm like, hey, man, like, where do you want us to set up? And they didn't have a place for us to set up because they just essentially wanted the brand so that they could put it on the marketing stuff.
Oh, my God.
And I saw a corner in the corner of the room. Ooh. That had like a little glass divider. And I'm like, is anyone there? There's like, oh, no, that guy never came. So I'm like, okay. So we go over there. There's no chairs, no nothing. Opti and I run around this hotel, go to the back, get chairs. We get a table. We set up the news desk, like a desk with chairs. And the background was the conference. And we just set up these like cheap, like Amazon lights. And we put them on little coffee tables like that. And we have the lights like kind of facing the news desk. Long story short, by the second day, there was a crowd of like people like looking and like seeing like, oh, how do you guys? Oh, my God. Like these guys are professional news broadcasters, like whatever. We had like the head of Bitmain in the U.S. like come like have like the you know, like come have like an interview with us. They had like people like, oh, can I have it? Whatever, like simply, but whatever. And we kept saying like throughout the entire conference, like Kaboom Racks, like kind of as a joke. All that being said, we came there. We had no idea what we're doing. We pretended, we faked it till we made it. We got the Kaboom Rack sponsorship. And then that led to essentially Gary Leland. I'm going up to Gary. I'm like, Gary, I think I could do the production for BitBlock Boom with the news desk. I had absolutely no, but I was just like in my head, it makes sense. And we winged it and it happened. It ended up being epic. And that just opened all these doors for other conferences. And they were just like, let's do the production. Like, obviously, we know how to do the production now. But the first time, we literally just grabbed the camera and microphones, got a table, put it all together. Me and Opti just like, we're just like, hey, guys, welcome to Simply Bitcoin and then whatever. And we just kind of like, we winged it. And then for the BitBlock Boom one, we were so nervous because, like, you know, it's kind of like a big deal. It was like the first like big conference and we were doing the stream. And when we hit live, like, me and Opti were so beat up because of like just setting everything up and making sure, mind you, we have no experience in production, right? So like we were learning along the way to make sure everything would work. And when we hit live, like Opti, like Opti hits the air horns on the soundboard. And then, and then he looks at the camera. He's like, "And we're back! Hey guys, welcome to Simply Bitcoin." And I'm looking at Opti, and then I look at the camera. I'm like, "Hey guys, welcome to the BitBlock Boom live stream day one." But yeah, that's kind of my funny story. Nice. Fake it till you make it. Proof of work. Pretend like you know what you're doing, and you'll end up doing it, which is absolutely hilarious.
Oh man, I love it.
That's great, man.
And you'd be surprised. A lot of people do this.
You know what? I'm actually not because like guys who are like, so this group of guys right here, like military guys are used to this kind of shit. you fucking show up in adverse circumstances. You put a bunch of fucking shit together. Some of it you're appropriating, some of it you're not. You're just making shit fucking work, right? And you just go for it.
Yeah, believe it or not, Bill O'Reilly did not coin the phrase "fuck it, we'll do it live." That was fucking veterans.
But it's kind of like it's a little bit of a mind fuck because, like, essentially, like, you know, they're like, oh, you need to be trained for this, like you need to have credentials, like you need to have like whatever. But what's happening with the internet specifically, right? Like some of the most successful, you know, Zoomers and millennials in Bitcoin today, they all have one thing in common. They're all college dropouts. So why is this happening? Well, essentially, like I said, like what I was saying earlier about like the disintermediation of information.
Yeah.
Information has been democratized because of the internet. So if I want to learn about production, I will go on YouTube and I will learn everything I need to know without having to take an entire, you know, college curriculum. And then that causes a little bit of like, you bash heads a little bit with someone who's like professionally trained, like quote unquote professionally trained. Yeah. She's like, how did this motherfucker learn in five? Like what, like how the fuck did he pull this off? Right.
This is exactly why I was saying that this is better that like, we're going up against an army of professionally trained people, but they suck because it's not real. And that's why it's like, we've got guys like Nico who just gave all of you listening a master class on information warfare and how we attack them by just doing something completely peacefully. Like,
yeah,
he just gave you the class on it.
Yeah. And it's not just that. I mean, this is like you're watching in real time the decentralization of the old systems, right? You have an entire generation of kids who have graduated college and they're anywhere from 50 to a, you know, couple $100,000 in student loan debt, and they're working a $3 over minimum wage job at 7-Eleven, and they're like, what's going on? I don't understand. And it's that whole credentialism thing is basically falling apart before our eyes.
100%.
It's a brave new world, man.
The other thing too with the credentialism is that, like, going Nico's route, like he developed a lot of other like skills that might not, that seem tangential or tertiary, but they're very primary, like adaptability, being able to do critical thinking and like being resourceful and just like bringing everything together even when shit goes completely haywire and like unplanned. The individuals that rely on the credential system, a lot of them lack that. Like, I know you guys know exactly what I'm talking about, like the people that are book smart, but when it comes to common sense and like learning how to like find their way around, like in the like IRL in the real world, in the meat space, like they suck at it. And it's just like, as we butt heads, like we're gonna start gaining like more and more ground. Like that's what people need to realize.
I think it's happening. Like I think it's happening in real time. And you know, Alex knows this, but you butt heads with a lot of those individuals. And I fundamentally believe that the reason that you kind of butt heads is because, again, because you don't have that credential, and the fact that you can do it anyways is very unsettling for a couple of reasons. It actually made me doubt myself a lot in my abilities for a while. But the reason that it unsettles them, number one, is because, holy shit, are you telling me that I didn't have to fucking sit through those college lectures? Number one. And number two, they almost feel like, you know, like that's not fair. Right. Like, you know, like you have to pay your dues. Right. And in a way, like if you're able to kind of brute force break through the wall anyhow and just be like, look, I'm at the table anyways. You know, I think it pisses off a lot of people that I don't wear a suit and tie. I don't wear a jacket, that I wear my beard a certain way, that my tips are tipped. Right. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. But this is the beauty of the Internet. And once again, this is something that the book, The Sovereign Individual, predicted. I wish I read this passage, you know, a couple years ago, but it says, this is a passage from the book, genius will be unleashed, freed from both the oppression of government and the drags of racial and ethnic prejudice in the information society. No one who is truly able will be detained by the ill-formed opinions of others. It will not matter what most of the people on earth might think of your race, your looks, your age, your intelligence, or the way you wear your hair. In their cyber economy, they will never see you. The ugly, the fat, the old, the disabled will vie with the young and beautiful on equal terms and in utterly colorblind anonymity on the new frontiers of cyberspace. Wow. So I think this is what's happening, is that the Internet just has democratized the whole information thing. And I think that before, you could only get certain types of knowledge and information via traditional schooling, and now YouTube has just completely just put that on its head, you know. Wow. So it's exciting,
man. That is good stuff. And I'm having flashbacks of some of the stuff that I've been reading of yours, Mike, about this new renaissance that we're transitioning into. It keeps coming back in the conversations, but you know, I mean, this, the transformation that we're undergoing as a species, really, as we move into this Bitcoin standard, is one that, you know, frees us from those shackles that are keeping us from realizing our true potential of creativity as human beings. And it's interesting because, you know, you see the academic system right now, it tries to channel people into certain directions, and it limits, you know, what your true potential could be by putting you into one certain direction. And you talked about the demoralization earlier, Nico, and that just kind of popped back into my head because, you know, when you take a look at the wasted time, okay, which we all know is the most precious resource that anyone has, is time. Okay, it's the most truly scarce thing that exists. But you take away people's time at a young age when they're impressionable and they think that they're going to go out and they're going to do great things with this degree that they're earning, and it's garbage. It's pointless. It's completely worthless, and there's nothing they can do with it. And then they're stuck with all this debt, working some crappy job that they hate just so they can survive. But then what happens? Okay, that demoralization is occurring because they got nothing, but then that debt is forgiven. And so then not only have you been demoralized, but then you've been saved by a false messiah that comes in and then essentially owns you. And that is another way that Bitcoin steps into this situation and frees thousands, if not millions of people from that particular slavery. So, yeah, sorry, you guys just got me thinking, man. And I did want to ask you a question, Nico. What are your thoughts on when we talk about Bitcoin or slavery? I've heard some people talk about the concept of partial slavery. What's your thought on that?
And what do you mean by that? Like,
well, I've heard the argument that, you know, it should be expected that we're going to have to experience some type of partial slavery in life, and that true freedom is not actually attainable.
So, you know, I could talk about my personal type of career over the last kind of like life experience over the last, what, 8 years in Bitcoin. You know, I think people underestimate what they're capable of as an individual if you're determined. And like what I've noticed is you get put down, people doubt you, people this, and I wish I knew this when I was younger. I would have saved a lot of heartaches. And you doubt yourself. You're like, no, this person's older. This person has more experience. This person, blah, blah, blah. But if you just power through and you stick to your beliefs and you don't take no for an answer and you're like, no, I'm going to keep going and you can't stop me and I'm going to be a fucking savage and I will beat you. You know, yeah, you're going to win. However, that being said, be prepared to get beat the fuck up in the process, embarrassed publicly, get like knocked, like get back up, took the sweat off, keep going. And if you do that, I think you can reach a level of independence and financial sovereignty that a lot of people are just, they normally wouldn't, but it's not because they can't. It's because they psych themselves out in the process. Yep. But if you have beliefs and dreams, like you can achieve them. There's a very big fucking price. But if you just are committed and laser focused, you will reach it. You will achieve your dreams. Like you will achieve, you know, freedom. You can. It's in your grasp. Just be prepared to make a lot of people pissed off and a lot of people to tell you no, and a lot of people to tell you that you can't do it and that it's impossible and the blah, 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 blah. But I swear what I've done, you know, the last 8 years is just like followed my heart. And, you know, I have no regrets. I'm happy where I am and I'm happy that it's brought me to this place. But I don't know if that answered your question, but yeah, man, I think it is totally possible. Just be prepared for the fucking system in the, because you know what it is, I think, honestly, is I think a lot of the times when you just keep going, what you're doing is you're putting up a mirror, and the person that tells you you can't do that or that you are in a certain place, that's the decision that they made at that moment in life. And what they're doing is that they're projecting themselves onto you, right? And I wish I fucking knew this 5 years ago, but you know, you learn, we have an expression in Spanish, which is you learn a los coñazos, which you learn at like smacking yourself against the wall, picking yourself back up, taking the sweat off your forehead, and you just keep marching forward. So I think that's how you achieve freedom. And then like success compounds, right? So like over time it starts to compound and compound and compound and compound, and then you know you kind of reach escape velocity after a certain point. I have no idea if that was related to your original question, but that's what I believe.
That was even better because my question was lame, so thank you for
thanks
that.
For making it better.
Yeah,
and faith in God the entire time, right? Like yeah, like I couldn't do this without God, right? So just faith in God, you know, belief and perseverance, proof of work, grit, determination, and you'll fucking win. You're going to get clobbered in the process.
Man, and just doing it, like you said, you know, and it's you know, we talk about the credential system and all this, and it's, you know, I mean, if you're going to, let's say you want to go and you want to learn jiu-jitsu from somebody, are you going to go and learn it from the guy who has studied it and read all the books and has understood the history for years? Or are you going to go talk to the guy that's got, you know, cauliflower ears on the side of his head and fingers that look like tree trunks? I mean, you're going to go to the guy that's had his ass whipped for years and years and years learning how to do it. And that's how it is. And it's like you said, I mean, you're going to get busted up if you get out there and if you get it, if you do it, but it's going to be worth it. And sitting on your ass doing nothing isn't going to get you anywhere except for more of sitting on your ass doing nothing.
100%. 100%.
I think some people are pretty motivated by what you said tonight, Nico.
We are
closing in on time, and I want to throw it around to you guys for parting thoughts before we get out of here.
All I'll say is that I'm glad to have Nico join us because he and I speak a lot of the same language. I think we might use different dialects sometimes, but I appreciate everything you talk about, man. It's why I've enjoyed coming on to the Simply show so many times. So I appreciate you joining us, dude.
I appreciate you guys having me, man. You guys have something incredibly special, and over time it will continue to kind of shape into this beautiful thing that you guys have created. I'm a very like instinctive person, and you know, my intuition, my instincts tell me that this is something very special that you guys have and that you guys have tapped into. And I'm highly appreciative of the invite, and you know, I hope the bench player put up 50 points today. And thank you guys so much for having me.
Hell yeah! I'm just gonna echo what Mike said. I mean, I don't have anything really to add. I mean, I'm gonna go back and watch this. This is my new hype video. So thanks for sharing it, man. And I'm looking forward to hanging out with you in Nashville.
100%. Simply Bitcoin at Nashville 2024.
Man, you're the first person that brought your own sound effects, man. I love
amazing.
It.
Amazing.
Great.
Oh, man.
Jordan, you look like you're going to go next.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on. This has been a really cool talk. I like everything we've built in the background. Like, I just know, like, all the guys that are watching or will watch here soon are really appreciative of you being on, the message you're bringing, and then the fact that you're helping and you're joining the Bitcoin Veterans Citadel. Like, dudes are really stoked about that. And that says a lot about you, as much as, you know, you want to, you know, say nice things about us. Like, it says a lot about you and everything you've created. I'm personally sad because in the process of helping to build this, I have not gotten to watch Simply Bitcoin as much as I used to. And I really miss those days. So it's awesome to sit down and like talk to you face to face. It doesn't make up for all those lost days, but well, like you said, when you're making content, exactly. It's hard to sit and watch it. But I do miss those days when I had time to.
Well, like I said, like, thank you for having me. And yeah, you know, you take the words out of my mouth. When you make content, the last thing you want to do is make more content. So I completely understand.
All right. So, Nico, first of all, you're not a bench player. You've always been an A-team player. You were just projected out in the calendar. And... we brought you forward, and so thank you for being here. You know how I feel about you, the brother from another mother, basically. And you know, I really like what you're talking about in terms of getting back up and continuing the fight regardless of the shit that hits you, because that to me just shows me once again, I mean, I already knew this about you, but you're a man with a warrior spirit, and you fit right in here, brother.
I appreciate it, man. And you guys are brothers to me too. And we're brothers in arms in the trench warfare, on the information trench warfare. We're in the trenches together, fighting for freedom and Bitcoin. So, you know, even though it's via the internet, it's still brothers in arms.
I think the one word that kept rattling around in my brain, which is, you know, mostly just vast space, guys, it's conviction. Right. Like tonight, I heard a man who had come from, you know, some very humble beginnings and has continued to push and push and push, no matter what the odds, no matter what the situation. And I think that is extremely relatable for a lot of people in this space. I think the difference is when you see them and you fight the fights that you know you can't win. And you do it with a happy heart, and you know that there are lessons to be learned, and that those lessons are going to make you stronger. It's not that it's failure. It is a lesson upon lesson type of lifestyle, where at the end of it, you become this, the sum of, you know, greater than the parts. And to see where you've come from and to see where you are now in the space, you are definitely not a backbencher, for God's sakes. You are leading a war. And I mean that. I mean, you are out front at the point as a point man that is disseminating information to people and I've seen it grow, Nico, from the very beginning of Simply Bitcoin to now, what you guys have accomplished is no less than a total credit to you and Opti and the whole Simply Bitcoin team. Not to mention you're a new father, which I think you start to wear that badge. And I think a lot of the guys here know that once you have that little guy over there in the nest, now it's time to like pull open the shirt and find that extra, you know, energy that you have, the extra want, the extra push to give that kid the best life possible. And so to have you on the Bitcoin team doing this, having the conviction that comes from a ton of knowledge and study and everything else, what an asset. We're humbled to have you here, man. And I think the entire Bitcoin space is better because of you. So keep up the amazing work. Thanks for coming in on Bitcoin Veterans. For everybody else, we do this every Thursday night, 7 p.m. We will be back next week with Breedlove and Jordan's sparkly hands and confetti over there. Thanks to Jordan, Mike, Alex, Gabe for all coming in. Nico is a special guest. And until next week, we will see you then. Peace.